This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Welcome this week to another episode with not one, but actually two guests that I've got here, actually from the United Kingdom. They are from Scotland, and I am presenting this for a variety of reasons, one of which I'm going to be traveling this next week to Blackpool, where I'll be actually giving some daily reports, so be sure to come back for that. I am going to be coming over, first of all, to London, spend a few days, get a chance to go to the Magic Circle, see some plays, perhaps the West End, and then afterwards going over to Liverpool, taking a Beatles tour with my friend Paul Stone, and then following Blackpool, going to fly over to Kerry in Southern Ireland and spend a few days there. And I've got a couple of people who I am looking forward to meeting who are friends of Pat Fallon, who he had recommended that I connect with while I'm over there, and then going over to Dublin to see Pat. I understand, unfortunately, Pat's not going to be at Blackpool this year because he had knee surgery. But if you want to hear him, you can listen to a podcast that we had done. Just go to the archives and or the search engine on the Magic Word Podcast and type in Pat Fallon. You can hear our conversation then with him. But to get into the British mood, I am presenting this week an episode with a couple of friends of mine, Jeff Burns and Ivor Smith. They have been longtime friends of mine, and together they are known as the Fifth Dimension. And it is kind of an unusual name for a corporation that specializes in doing safety training for corporations around the world. And not just that's their, although safety is their main thing, they do other things as well. They talk about that. This is a very unique area of magic, or I should say unique area of alternate streams of revenue. And it's, they share some ideas and don't hold back any punches. So if you're interested in trying to replicate something like this to go in this direction, there appears to be an opening for you to try to get into this, whether it's going to be in your area, your region, your state, wherever, or perhaps as they do, go globally. And you might find your own niche where you'll be able to use magic to make some presentations, or as they say, magically enhanced presentations. I like that. Anyhow, I'm going to let them discuss all this and let you learn from them. So please welcome my friends here this week, Mr. Jeff Burns and Ivor Smith, the Fifth Dimension, here on The Magic Word. Today, or this evening, we're going across the pond, going over to the UK, where we're going to be visiting with a couple of my mates from Aberdeen, Scotland, and they are known as the Fifth Dimension. There used to be three of these gents, but there are two, and it's the reason I really want to talk with them is, of course, this podcast is about talking with friends and talking about magic, and these guys have been friends of mine, golly, 20 plus years. I don't know. It seems like forever. And I enjoy every chance we get whenever I get to see them. And they often came over to Houston because of their unique business that we're going to be talking about here today. Specifically, they are not just magicians, but also corporate spokespeople, but they talk with corporations and do corporate training. And that kind of thing is really kind of a specialty. We have had many other kinds of guests who have been corporate performers, but not many who specialize then in corporate training. And so we're going to talk a little bit about, well, probably quite a bit about that then as well. And again, they're known as the Fifth Dimension. We'll find out why here in just a few moments. So please welcome my guest, Ivor Smith. Hey there, Ivor.
Hi. Good to see you, Scott.
You too. And also my buddy, Jeff Burns. Hey there, Jeff.
Hey, Scott. Thank you so much for joining us and having us.
You're quite welcome. Thank you very much for coming on The Magic Word. I appreciate also, Ivor, of your son, Ian, getting us together and, you know, kind of pushing this forward. I've been wanting to do this for a while, and he's been the one to facilitate that. I understand he's got a new job he's going to be starting sometime soon. By the time this comes out, he will probably have been there for quite a while. But
yeah, that's right. The end of this month, he starts a new job. Yeah.
Yeah. How is everything going? You guys are still in Aberdeen, I guess, and you get together frequently?
Yeah, still local to Aberdeen, the northeast. I'm just outside, so I live in a little village called Newmacker. Ivor's in the big city, so every so often we get together for coffee, chat, signing each other's expense claims, things like that, as well as obviously client events.
Yeah, now you guys have been together for how many years?
Well, we've been in business together for 25 years. This is our 25th year. Just past June was the anniversary. But we've known each other for probably 33 years, I think, all in all.
Wow. That's a lifetime.
Yeah.
That is a lifetime for most people. That just seems like yesterday for me. I'm an old guy.
Yeah, so are we, Scott. So are we.
And with that, again, there was another gentleman who was with you for a long time, Duncan. What was?
Bill Duncan, yeah.
Bill Duncan.
Yeah, he was the three of us founded the company together back in 1999. But again, he's been a friend, again, probably for 33 years as well, because we all met at the same time in Aberdeen Magical Society. That's how we all kind of met up with each other.
Yeah.
Had you all been doing magic of your own independently and then kind of came together and decided this was something that you could do as a group? And then, so, you know, kind of curious about that.
We all joined the Magic Society, Aberdeen Magical Society, around about 1991, 92, there or thereabouts. And because we were all new kids on the block, we bonded very quickly. Possibly because we were intimidated by a lot of the older and much more experienced magicians. So we kind of formed a friendship group. And then we realized that each one of us was doing training in a business environment. So I'm a chartered accountant by trade, specializing in tax. And I was using magic to make tax training a lot more enjoyable for the people that were forced to go to it by their bosses. And those people often didn't want to be there. So I thought if I do a little bit of magic, they might like me. Mm. And Ivor was doing something similar in his job.
I was working in the local government in Aberdeen, and I had a team of staff, and I had to kind of help kind of train those staff and also do presentations and just to pep it up and make it more interesting. I was using magic just as a way to do that. And, you know, when we found we're all doing something similar, we decided, you know, there may be a business idea in this and kind of explore that for a little while before setting the company up.
Well, talking about the Aberdeen Club, I had visited your club on a time or two, and I think I may be now a charter member of the club.
Yeah.
And it's a great group of guys and have been around for quite a while. Can you tell me, do you know about how long the Aberdeen Magic Society has been there?
Yes, we can, because in 2 years' time, 2026, we celebrate 100 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, it started in 1926, back in the day. And the first president, was it Cragen, Ivor? Was that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Back in the day. So, and we just heard last night, I mean, obviously other people have known this, and I either did know it and forgot, but one of the first chair people of the group that met together to decide that they were going to set up Aberdeen Magical Society was a guy called T. Scott Sutherland. He was not only a brilliant magician, but he was also, he had many businesses. He was an entrepreneur and he was an architect. And actually, a lot of the university in Aberdeen is paid for or was gifted by him back in the day. So he was a huge character in Aberdeen.
Now, of course, the Society of American Magicians was not as nationally known at the time. And so you probably were not a member of any international or even national organization. I assume it was just an independent and still is independent.
Yeah, yes. Independent, although it's a member of SAMS, which is the, not to be confused with SAM in America, but SAMS, the Scottish Association of Magical Societies. And I think that started fairly soon after 1926 as well. I think it was maybe 10, 15 years afterwards or something like that. I'm not exactly sure of the date of SAMS.
I am always constantly amazed about how many magic clubs in the UK there are when you stop and think about the relative geographical size of the nation itself in comparison with the United States, that it's, I don't know, roughly the size, let's say, of Virginia or whatever. The point is of how many, not just magicians, but magic societies they have. I think in and around London, there must be 10 or 12 different independent groups that specialize in different kinds of things, whether it's mentalism or bizarre or affiliated with the IBM or whatever. And so similarly, I guess Scotland has its number of groups as well as in England.
Yeah, I mean, every major city and town in Scotland has its own magic society or magic club. Yeah, there's
some more than one. But,
yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Over the years, there's fallouts happen, and then two clubs come out of one club, and then after about 20, 30 years, they merge back again.
Why do you think that is? There are so many magic clubs in the UK in general.
I don't know. I mean, magic's been a big thing in the UK with the TV magicians back in the day. So I think that plays a big part of it. There's maybe the Brotherhood as well. And, 1926, when the club was started, that was about 10 years after World War One, roughly. And maybe it was just a case of people were beginning to come back into, hey, we need to have fun in our lives again. We need to start going back to some of the things that we were interested in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet, as many magicians there are, I'm surprised at the relatively small number of magic shops there are. I'm thinking of, like in Glasgow, Roy Walton's place, Tam Shepherd's. It's one of the only shops I can think of in Scotland.
Yeah, there's another one just recently opened up in Edinburgh. The name escapes me, but there is one in Edinburgh.
Wonder & Co. or something like that. It's operated by Cammy Gibson, I believe. He's put it together, and it seems to be doing well. I think that was just a year ago. I think they just celebrated their first year, and they've got a nice little theatre. And again, a magic shop these days, I think, has to be more than just selling props. They've almost got to be doing lectures, doing informal gatherings, doing paid events and all that as well, workshops, even magic lessons sometimes. They've almost got to be like a garden center, which doesn't just sell plants, but it's a coffee shop, it's a gift shop, it's, five in one.
Yeah, that's a good point. But my point is about how few physical brick and mortar magic shops that there have been in Scotland, as opposed, well, let's say like in Chicago, back in its heyday, I think there were like six shops downtown Chicago within a 2-block radius of each other, just in one city. And there were a lot of magicians in Chicago then, of course, obviously, that the shops would support. But today, of course, with the online shops, everybody's able to buy anything from wherever and get it shipped fairly quickly, at least within the country, domestically. Overseas might take a little bit longer to get things shipped. And my point is that we didn't have that until 20 years ago or so. And so for those first 100 or I guess 80 years or so that your organization was there, I'm surprised that there weren't more magic shops and closer to where the magicians were.
Yeah.
I think traditionally, a lot of magic was sold through novelty shops as opposed to kind of bespoke shops.
For example,
in Aberdeen, we had a shop called the Joke Factory, which sold all the novelty gags and things that you would expect from that sort of shop. But they also had a magic section. And for a long time, like on a Saturday morning out with the Aberdeen Magical Society meetings, a number of magicians would actually meet in the joke shop, the Joke Factory. And they would chat about magic. They would kind of chat with the owner, who would kind of bring in the latest kind of ideas and props. So although it wasn't a magic shop, it sold magic. And I think that might have been replicated. I can't say for sure, but I think that might have been replicated throughout Scotland as well. In fact, Tam Shepherd's itself, which is known as a magic shop, is actually a novelty shop and sells fancy dress costumes and gags and things as well. So it's not a bespoke magic shop. So I think maybe it's historically it's because of that. There was also, most of the stuff was bought, I think, in the past just through catalogues. the kind of mail order service, if you like. I think that's how most people got their magic. Yeah. Yeah. Before the internet, obviously.
I used to get so excited waiting for that catalogue. You know, you would wait months for this thing to appear. And Supreme Magic used to do a catalogue that was, so thick. And you just spend hours going through it and circling all the things that you wanted to buy.
Yeah, it's just like years ago in the U.S., we used to have like the Sears and Roebuck Christmas catalog. You could hardly wait when I was a kid for that to come out. It would have all the toys and everything, and I would circle the things I wanted. Rarely got anything that I wanted, but I wanted everything, you know, that was in the book. Just like, you know, I want everything that's going to be in a magic catalog there, too. And, I know Supreme was the one that everybody had used throughout the UK to order all of your stuff back then. And so I know that, again, just briefly, we'll move on. But as far as the Aberdeen Magic Society goes, I know that you've had a lot of really great magicians, aside from the two of you who have gone on to international excellence and things that you're doing that we'll discuss in a moment. But also, I know that Colin McLeod was from your area. And from the club there, so when I first met him back when, I guess he was just getting out of high school or just getting started way back when. And who were the two guys who they're not together anymore, but they were... Stuart and Barry, yeah.
Yeah, so there's Stuart McLeod and Barry... what's Barry's surname? I've forgotten. It'll come back to me. But yeah, Stuart and Barry, as they became known, a great double act, both from... just outside Aberdeen, but both met at the Aberdeen Magic Circle Society, and then went on to, great success on a number of TV series. Colin McLeod was more Glasgow-based, so like Central Belt, and he's gone on to, you know, huge international success as well.
And I'm thinking, what is the gentleman's name also, who I think now lives in Australia, his son's still in Aberdeen? Bill Seagraves, great guy. Yeah,
he is.
He's actually in New Zealand rather than Australia. He's in New Zealand. He joins our meetings via Zoom every week that we meet. So he actually attends the meetings, but virtually to keep
up. And loves it.
The club.
It's almost given him a new lease of life as well with regards to magic, because he moved over 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Can't remember how long it was, and so we never saw him other than when he came over, you know, maybe every 3-5 years or something like that. But now we get to see him every week. He joins it.
I've seen him occasionally because he'll show up at the IBM conventions here in the U.S. From time to time too. And speaking about coming to the U.S., you guys come over then quite frequently as well. And when I was living in Houston, it was always great to see you, because we would have the Offshore Technology Conference, the OTC, as it was called, which is the world's largest oil conference exhibition, basically. And sometimes you had been over here working, and other times you've been just kind of soliciting customers. And those are two different things I want to discuss here for just a minute. But getting into exactly what you do, I understand also that you talk with people who are working offshore drilling rigs and talking about safety and importance of that. And I assume that you weave magic into that. And is that like a half day, 3-day program? Or anyhow, a lot of questions. Can you tell me just a little kind of what's your elevator speech when you tell people about what the fifth dimension is?
So for me, it's a case of we try and inspire and engage people with magic and make the message a lot more memorable. Somebody once called it, we were struggling for years as to what to call it. We didn't know what to call it ourselves. And someone said to us at a networking event, how's your magically enhanced training going? And all three of us looked at each other. You know, there was this light bulb moment. We thought, magically enhanced training. That's exactly what it is. That's kind of what we refer to, or if we're doing safety courses, we just call it like safety magic. And it's a way of tying magic into messages that particularly the people that are working in the energy business and offshore, they have to go to so many different safety training awareness courses. And usually it's death by PowerPoint. You know, there's 1,000 slides. They've heard it all before. They know it all before. And so what we've done is develop, a 45-minute to an hour presentation that gets across so many different magic messages. And the magic just makes it a lot more fun and enjoyable. And, people interact with it, particularly people that have been in the business for such a long time, because it's just a refreshing change. Mm-hmm. So that's the safety aspect. And Ivor could probably talk a little bit more about the some of the other things we've done in America, which is like more trade shows, I guess.
But just to go back to the safety thing, I mean, you were asking about kind of our elevator pitch and what, you know, whether it's kind of short courses or kind of 3-day things. We do a range of different things, a range of almost like a portfolio of choices for clients. And I always say that, you know, what we do is we use magic as a visual aid to reinforce positive safety behaviors in the workplace. That would be the kind of key phrase that I would use when we're talking to clients. And we do that, as Jeff says, in a number of ways. You know, we can do a 45-minute to an hour-long presentation, but we can also do, you know, two-hour workshops, half-day workshops. It just depends on what the client wants and how deep they want us to go into the various topics. And everything we do is designed to reflect that client's culture around behavioral safety. So although we have our kind of a set presentation, every time we do it, it's tailored to the particular client, because we talk to them about, you know, what language do they use to themselves to put across their safety information. And therefore, we reflect that to make sure that we're on message with the company. So it's very much a case of making sure that, you know, we dovetail exactly with their culture, so that when we use the magic to put across the message, it's kind of just reinforcing, to be fair, almost reinforcing what they already know, but we're doing it in a way that will actually make it memorable for them. You know, we've had people come to us 16 years after we've done a presentation and say, I remember the presentation you did, I remember this particular effect, and I remember the message that is associated with that effect and how it actually impacted me and made me think differently about safety. So it's a really powerful way to get a message across.
Well, magic is something that is visceral and memorable, certainly, and it does exemplify particular points about how to get those across. Do you find then, Ivor, also from the standpoint of doing this in different countries, perhaps even in different languages, there are some that are more understanding or appreciative or accepting, I should say, and saying, yeah, we want this, versus others saying, no, this isn't something that we want to? I mean, is it a cultural thing, a national thing that one country or another won't, or what?
I mean, we have worked, I mean, literally all over the world with this, and we find, and I think, Jeff, you'll agree, it's well received wherever we go. You know, we find that we obviously have to sort of change some of the language that we use and you know, be aware of the different cultures. We did a long-term contract in Thailand, and, you know, so we had to be aware of the fact that they have a thing over there called Grenjive, where they actually defer to senior people regardless of their position in a company. It's to do with age. So when it came to actually looking at how we were going to get across safety messages, we had to kind of consider that their culture is very much one that is age-based, and that can be a problem if the supervisor is a younger person than the person that they're supervising. And so, you know, we had to look at ways to make sure that people understood the need to actually reflect the sort of chain of command, if you like. And there's also the language barrier as well that we have to consider when we're doing that. And in the likes of some of the work we've done in Spain and again in Thailand, we've used interpreters, and we use them in different ways. In Thailand, it was instantaneous interpretation. Is that the right phrase, Jeff? Yeah.
Simultaneous, I think they call it.
Simultaneous.
Everyone was wearing, you know, like an earpiece, and there was a little booth at the back of the room where there was two people that were interpreting as we were speaking. So we just had to slow down the pace of delivery a fraction. But what we did was we spent a little bit of time with them and talked them through both the pace and the tricks that we were doing, because we didn't want them to react to them. and then not be able to communicate properly to the rest of the people that were listening. Whereas in Spain, the way that it worked better there was I had one person translating only for me, and I had one person from them. And again, we'd rehearse with these people to make sure that everything goes as smoothly as it can on the day. And that's a key thing for any, particularly international travel. Just plan in time for rehearsal and tell your clients that this is needed to make sure it's seamless.
I assume that more times than not, you use some sort of visual aids.
Yeah, well, the magic is really the visual aid, I guess. And so for that reason, we use very visual magic, like Professor's Nightmare, Shrinking Head, the domino dice effect where you turn it around, it's got different numbers on it all the time. So most of our magic is quite visual as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we don't use other visual aids like PowerPoint. You know, we made a decision very early on that the only visual aid we wanted to use was our USP, was the magic. And so that's all we do. That's all we use. So the message is conveyed either through the magic or invariably through how we debrief what has just happened in the magic. Because everything we do is, the way it works is we either incorporate the message in the pattern of the effect that we're doing, or a lot of the time we'll do an effect and then we'll talk about what happened in the effect relates to a safety behavior, for example.
I would imagine that safety is safety from the standpoint that things are the same, that you might come back year after year or a decade later and some of the same principles that you're teaching are unchanged. However, as technology changes, their machinery changes, the personnel changes, of course, you probably update that as well.
Yeah. The message and how we communicate the message will change from client to client and from year to year. And also because of that, the effect, you have to come up with a new effect. But we may have about 5 or 6 different magical effects that get over the same sort of message just by working with the same clients frequently.
Do they give you an idea of what it is that they want to get across during the time that you have with them? And
often they do, but sometimes what we've noticed, if it's the first time working for a client and they almost go into this, wow, so much is possible. It's almost like a child going to their lounge after Santa has been, and there's all these toys and presents all wrapped up in the excitement. And clients realize how many messages we can get across in quite a short time. And sometimes you can see them just like, it's almost too overwhelming for people. So at that point, we just say to them, when people are leaving the venue at the end of the day, whatever it is, what 3 messages do you want them going away with? Or what 3 things do you want them thinking about going out the door? Invariably, one of them was, that was fun. But the other thing is, it might be the importance of, if you see something, say something. So if you see that something looks unsafe or looks unusual or just doesn't look as if it's right, then have that conversation. Stop the job, have that conversation from a safety point of view. Or it might also be, it all comes down to me. I am accountable for safety within this organization, because some people think it's the safety department that is responsible for safety. But a key message for our clients is, no, it's actually I'm responsible for safety within this organization. So depending on what they say with regards to that, and they will have different, almost like flavors of safety or different emphases or themes on an annual basis or even a quarterly basis sometimes.
When you were talking about all the toys being laid out and everything, does that mean that you have things in which the participants actually pick up something and you teach them a trick with that? Do they get a take with them or no? Yes, no?
Yes, and no.
Yeah, I'm saying no, he's saying yes. So.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, we're a great team. We work so well together.
Yeah, people who are listening to this and not watching it, yeah, Jeff's over here nodding yes and Ivor's shaking his head saying no. That's just funny.
So I'll give my take on that is we do a couple of tricks where we take them through, but we don't necessarily teach them magic. So we do, from a safety point of view, we do a hand clasp trick, which many people start off their shows with. But we have a safety message attached to it. So we take them through the process, but we don't necessarily explain. In fact, we don't explain how the trick works. But when we do some other events, so I'm trying to think, we do a workshop that is all about leadership and communication. And as part of that, we teach people how to make a balloon poodle or how to do plate spinning or juggling. So we never teach magic, but we do teach some practical skills as well.
Some circus skills.
We use those as kind of experiential exercises. But yeah, we don't actually teach people how to do magic. But as Jeff says, we get them to participate because we have a range of things where some of them, they just watch us. Some, you know, we've got one or two or three people helping, and some pieces we've got the whole room is involved in the magic. But they never know how it's done. That's on the no list. We often get asked that, you know, do you teach us how to do magic? We say, no, that's not how this works. It's about, having fun, experiencing the magic. And then, you know, the messages are allied to it.
And like any magic show as well, I think our safety show, let's call it that, if we're doing like an hour's worth of safety, it has to have ebbs and flows. So highs and lows, things for everyone to get involved with, things we bring up three or four people to help with something, things where we maybe have one individual, or things where they're just watching me and Ivor going through some form of magical routine or process.
And so when people have you come back year after year, you said you've got maybe a half dozen different things per principle that you're using. I guess those rotate out, or after a while you have, I know, again, new people who are coming in all the time that need to have training, or are these just for new employees only?
No, it's not just for new employees.
Okay. So it's a reminder also to longtime employees. So my point is, I guess when people come in and you're doing something, it's like one guy's punching the other guy saying, hey, watch, he's going to do such and such because you did that last year.
Yeah. No, for that. So another thing that we do for every performance that we do, probably like a lot of magicians, we keep a record not only of what tricks we do, but what message we do as well. And that makes it really, really easy when the client then books you back in 6 months or a year, say, oh, can you come back and do this? Then we just go back and say, what did we do for them last year? Right. Okay. This is the show. As long as it links with their message. So we'll have a chat with them first about what key messages do you want to get across this year? And that may dictate we do, you know, a whole different performance, rather than, you know, maybe, right, let's do the same messages, but different tricks. It really depends on what each client wants at any given moment.
Just to kind of reinforce what Jeff says, we try to make sure that if it's an audience that knows us, that we're not repeating material. Because obviously, as you said yourself, Scott, they would be nudging each other and saying, oh, I know what's going to happen here, which kind of takes away the impact of it. So we'll always try and introduce new material for repeat audiences.
I think it is important that you are working and customizing each presentation for your audience and for your client, because it could be, for an example, they had some sort of a safety issue during the year where something wasn't working right, or there were more accidents and they need to avoid that. And so this is now our key focus. We want to make sure we have fewer accidents with this particular thing or area.
Yeah. Quite a lot of times we'll go in to a client that has booked us and things have changed in the past few weeks, and they say, we've had two hand injuries, you know, in the last month. And so we're changing the focus, and it's now going to be all about hand safety, which is great for magicians because hands are our business, our livelihood. Mm-hmm. So we then will kind of like say, that's fine. We can theme our presentation to focus on, and we use that word a lot as well. So it won't exclusively be about hand injury, because again, that doesn't give the ebb and flow that a show needs to have, I think. But we tell people we will focus on those key areas.
Well, again, this is something I think that is an area that is untapped. I mean, as far as I know, you're the only ones who specialize, particularly, I guess, in safety messages. There are a lot of people who are corporate trainers, corporate speakers, et cetera, who talk about different areas of expertise, time management or business development or whatever it might happen to be. But your main and key focus, I guess, really is more towards safety.
Yeah, it's the biggest part of our business. I mean, I think we've heard that there are people doing, and it's very popular in America, not so much here, but a lot of people do road safety talks, particularly for primary school children, which again is kind of like an aspect of safety. But yeah, as far as we're aware, we've never met anybody that is doing kind of the safety behaviors across multiple industries.
Yeah, you kind of cornered the market, it sounds like, in the world, because, again, you're working all over the world. And then bringing it back again to, I guess, Houston and where you have come down to visit during the OTC and things like that, that's where you kind of generate more leads. And how do you go about doing that? It's mainly through networking, isn't that right?
Mm. Yeah, I would say it's relationships. The first time we came to OTC, it was a business development thing for us. And so Wyver and I thought, right, we'll go around, and Bill was there with us as well. We'll walk around the show and we'll try and meet largely people. I don't even know if we were thinking about, should we speak to Scottish companies that are over there exhibiting, or should we speak to American companies that will then maybe take us to America? And it was quite confusing, and we made some good contacts with people, but we very quickly realized we don't have to do that. The best networking for us happened in the bar afterwards, when we just happened to be in the bar, relaxing ourselves and having a pack of cards on us, and someone saying, oh, you guys are the magicians, and then doing that and just being really informal. So we did the exhibition for the first 2 days, and for the rest of the week, we spent the days at the swimming pool in our hotel, thoroughly enjoying a holiday, and just went out and networked in the evening with people that were mainly from Aberdeen, because like planefuls of Aberdonians go across to America for Houston. And that was a great way to network.
Yeah. Most of our work comes from word of mouth. You know, we've never really done much, if any, above the line advertising, for example. You know, we don't take adverts out or do a lot of kind of sending out of flyers and that sort of thing. It's all networking, as Jeff says, and also word of mouth. We're smart enough to know that every time we do a presentation or a workshop, it's basically an addition, because it's, invariably when we're working for a client, it's not just that client that's in the room, because they often bring in their contractors and other companies as well. Yeah. To be part of that event. And so we know that there are people there who are potential bookers for us. And that's how we get most of our business, actually, is through word of mouth and through people actually seeing us. Even if it's only the client in the room, it may be that one division has booked us to do something, but there'll be representatives from other divisions within the companies. You know, because these companies, you know, especially the multinationals, are so big. And therefore that then creates a kind of wave of business that we get, because the other divisions all want us for their teams as well.
Right. Plus, by that point, you're already an approved vendor and you're in their system, and it's easier to have a known factor of who you are, and you guys have proven yourselves for this division. You can easily translate this to another division and be paid easily because, again, you're already in our system and we know you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. In fact, that happened with a large energy provider. One division booked us to do something before Christmas, and by February the next year, we'd had about 3 or 4 other bookings from that same client, but different departments, because all the PAs get together and say, oh, we had these guys in, they did this. And they were all looking to do, they were all restructuring their organizations. And yeah, we got a bunch of good quality work from just doing one event, because people talk with each other.
Well, that's true. And again, particularly within one department, I mean, they're having meetings internally as well and saying, what have you done? What have you used? What's worked and what's not? I know that Houston is more or less a sister, being an energy city, that Houston is a sister city to Aberdeen, which is a major energy city then as well. So you were saying a lot of times you try to connect with people who are already from Aberdeen. So this way that you, I mean, although you do it around the world, you kind of focus on trying to do as much as you can with as many people there in your backyard.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easier to do. And what we found is the people, like, we ended up doing a $500,000 contract in Thailand, and that was all through someone in Aberdeen that had seen us before in an energy company, and they now lived and worked over there, and they wanted us to go over there and do some work to support their safety performance as well. And the same has happened elsewhere. We were in Australia this year working with an energy company. And again, that came because of work that we'd done with their Aberdeen office, who then basically recommended to the Australians that these are the guys you should bring in to help you.
But what I guess I'm getting at is that people who are interested in this type of program, or since, again, this is quite unique in the world that you do, then after others listen to this might think, well, that I may be able to find something like in Detroit, let's say, for auto parts. The auto workers need to have safety meetings all the time, too, whether it's Chevy or Ford or whatever company is going to have their own meetings as well. I assume that you have branched out of just the energy market and you don't confine yourselves just to that as far as safety talks go. But I would think for those who might be listening, they could probably recreate something, because any place, any business that has manufacturing associated with it certainly would have needs for safety talks.
Yeah, very much so. And not only manufacturing, but service industries as well. I mean, you're quite right. Energy certainly has been our biggest market. But, you know, we've done work for railways, for maritime, for the police, for local authorities, which is local governments, over here. We've done pharmaceuticals, finance, you know, any industry has to look at safety as an issue, and it doesn't matter what that industry is.
Well, safety in the workplace. I mean, basically, yeah, I mean, it could be exactly. In the office. It doesn't mean you have to be on the manufacturing line.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the work we do is for office-based staff. We did some work at Uber, in Amsterdam just last year. And that was for all their office-based staff around the world. We went over to Amsterdam and we performed to a group in the office there, or in their kind of studio there, but it was broadcast around to all their offices around the world. So, you know, it's any industry. So if anybody is looking to replicate it, you know, yeah, it doesn't have to be the energy industry. It doesn't have to be a high risk industry or a perceived high risk industry. Any industry will need to put across safety issues to their staff.
Shoot, I think it could be even if you're working at a fast food restaurant, you have to watch out for the deep fryer, that you don't put your hand in there or certain things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's the case. In fact, legally, and I don't know what the law is in America, but in the UK, I think it's if you have more than 5 staff, then you must have a health and safety policy for those people. Now that can vary as to what that looks like, but here's another thing which is really interesting. Training budgets are a lot higher than entertainment budgets. And in times of recession or downsizing or budget cuts, entertainment is probably the first one that's cut. Training is one that is usually maintained, if not increased, because we need people to be better, stronger, faster, whatever it is, if we're going through some sort of challenging times.
That's a very good point. I know in downtimes in particular, as you say, there are a lot of things in the budgets that are cut, but those are things that are of paramount importance, and that is of maintaining the safety and security of your employees. And so that's where the money would go. And like you said, that could be increased as well. So it's important, I guess, point where the people can go and talk with the company and saying that we would like to do some corporate training. Well, we don't need to have any more people coming in and telling us how to manage our time better. But, you know, we probably could use somebody to talk to us about safety if you know anything about that. And in that regard, had you taken a lot of safety training courses yourselves? Was there a safety Bible that you read, or did you go online? Or, I mean, how did this come about as far as learning and getting your expertise in safety? I mean, we talked earlier about how that you got your expertise in magic and how that you came about doing this. But what about your background in safety? What gives you the authority, I guess, to speak to others about this?
I suppose, ironically, we got into this market by accident. I guess probably the truth of it, because we had originally set up the company to look at using our magic to reinforce things around soft skill, soft management skills. As Jeff mentioned, there are things like communication, team development, leadership, those sorts of areas. But when we did a little bit of promotion early on, it was very quickly picked up by a company who came to us and said, look, I see what you're doing in terms of using magic. We're running a safety event. Would it work for that? Now, we had no kind of particular expertise in safety at that time. And we said, well, we're sure it will. What are the messages that you're looking to put across? So when it started off, we basically took the company's messages from them and kind of regurgitated to them, by using using the magic to reinforce them. And it's just been over time, we've never gone to any kind of safety courses as such, but every safety event that we work at, rather than just turning up and doing the 45 minutes or an hour or whatever it is we're doing and then going away, we will tend to get there at the start of the event, listen to what the other presenters are saying, listen to what they're talking about, and then we will use that information within the presentations that we are delivering. So we've soaked up a lot of good information over, in those 25 years, and also formed our own kind of views and opinions on things as well. And that kind of is all now in the mix in terms of what we deliver. In terms of that soaking up information, we'll go into an event with a plan in terms of what we will be looking to do. But because we will soak up information from other presenters, we very much work on the fly as well. And we will incorporate some of their phraseology and kind of push that back at them, which then makes the whole thing look seamless and makes it kind of, just as I say, seamless for the client.
That makes sense, because also they feel as if that you are emphasizing what they had just heard. It's what they always say, I guess, in the military, you say it again, then tell them what you said, kind of a thing. So that's that way that they get it. And is there a particular dynamic or something like that that you use to make sure people hear the message? I mean, in other words, you go back and reinforce it, or at the end saying, hey, we talked about this, this, and this, and so I just want to remind you, and then kind of tie it all together. I mean, and also, does this last about a half hour, half day? So two questions there, I guess. What do you do as far as trying to bring this all together? And then second of all, how long do your presentations last?
So presentations, I'll answer that one first because that's probably the easiest. Mm-hmm. Most of our presentations are a standalone, let's say 45 to 60 minutes. And we'll just go through, we'll do our event, and then that's us finished. But increasingly, more clients are bringing us in to do shorter interventions throughout the day. So maybe the start of the day, after morning coffee, before or after lunch, and then after noon coffee. And we'll do like maybe 10 to 15 minute events throughout the day. We say this to clients, is it just keeps the day fresh, fun, and energized throughout. And largely what we'll do is we'll take our 60-minute show and just split it into modular parts for however long they are needed. So we might actually be with a client from 8 in the morning till 5 o'clock at night, but we only do 45 to 60 minutes throughout that day.
Hmm.
with regards to the how we get the message across, as Ivor says, it is a little bit of just listening to what they say, and particularly the phraseologies that they use as well, the words, the terminology they use, and making sure that we incorporate that, and also referring back our points to, well, let's say their managing director has spoken about the future. We do a trick fairly early on, talking about the future and link it to Peter Drucker. But we'll introduce that by saying, you know, as Bob, the managing director, was speaking about earlier, looking at the future, and then we link everything in that way. So whatever phrasing they're using, or anecdotes or stories, we will, if it's helpful, we'll link back to these as well. And what we found is our clients then link back to what we've done. And they said, so they're maybe talking about one aspect of leadership, and they'll say, remember what Ivor told us about, you know, as leaders, we need to not just be so focused on one aspect that we miss this bigger picture. And so they'll start to reflect our anecdotes and stories as well.
I think we also, in terms of, you know, asking how we kind of sum up, we do have one or two effects that we can do that will kind of bring everything together as well. For example, Jeff does a great version of the magic square. But the way he does it, it actually pulls together, kind of lots of the issues that we've talked about in the course of our presentation. And he's able to kind of use the, you know, the different columns, the different diagonals, the different groups of numbers to kind of represent some of these different things that we've talked about and how it kind of all works together. So it's, you know, we do it both ways. You know, we reflect back, as Jeff's saying, throughout, but we do have one or two things that we can use to tie up everything at the end as well.
How do you go about energizing people? You touched on that just briefly. Coming back, like after lunch, a lot of times people are kind of drowsy, and it's kind of like we've had a long morning, we just had a big meal, and they come back, it's okay, now what do you want to talk about? And it's hard to get them started. Do you have like exercises to get them refocused, or what do you do?
Just have fun. We make it, we are as energized as we feel that we want them to be as well. So part of it is just because Ivor and I are a double act, there's loads of comedy that we have as part of our routines as well. So for example, I'm very short. I'm only 5 foot tall. Ivor is taller than me. But if we're doing a trick after lunch, let's say, the impossible knot, where you get a bunch of people up with a piece of rope and they've got to tie a knot in it without letting go their the ends of the rope. So a fairly standard trick. A lot of magicians will use it at trade shows, and it's a great way of attracting people to the stand because people are inherently nosy and curious, and they want to see what's happening over there. So one of the things that we do to make it fun and energizing is we supposedly pick random people to help us, but we actually pick some of the tallest people that we can find in the room. So when they came up, they come up and stand next to me, and suddenly I look tiny in comparison. And it's okay. We're doing a trick that has got no need for that comedy, but it just elevates the whole trick to make it funny and engaging. And if people are laughing and enjoying themselves, they're energized. You know, we often are not energized when someone comes and says, right, we're now going to watch this presentation, and they take us through 20, 30, 40 slides. If you're having fun with your audience and it's live and dynamic and you are interested in them, then the energy carries itself, I think.
Just the fact that we are actually doing magic after, you know, after lunch is different for virtually every audience we do. They, you know, they don't see that every day. So that in itself, the fact that they're seeing something different, is enough to kind of re-energize people as well, because they're immediately, leaning forward and thinking, oh, what's going on here? What's going to happen here? And it kind of piques their interest rather than, as Jeff says, kind of sitting back and snoozing as they watch a slideshow.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that when you were made that conscious decision early on in your careers of making sure that the magic is what's going to be your visual and not to rely on a PowerPoint presentation or anything behind you or screen or whatever. That's just additional equipment to have to bring along with you. But if you have magic that you're bringing along, you don't need anything else. And that's what your visual is.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, you hit the nail on the head there saying, you know, no other additional equipment. Ivor and I walk into a room with a fairly small backpack, and that's got everything that we need in it for the full day. So no flight cases. Everything travels with us on the plane if we're doing international stuff. And it just makes life so much easier for us. And our get out is about 2 minutes, just picking up the very last things that we need to, putting it in the bag, and that's us out the door.
That's pretty ideal.
That's us potentially out the door. We often stay in network as well, but the work side of it is done.
Yeah. Right. And also, we have no technology problems. That can't fail on us like it so often does, you know.
That was going to be my next point, the fact that you actually don't have to worry about it because a rope is going to work. You don't know necessarily if this plug-in, maybe the power doesn't work there. I mean, as simple as that. And a lot of things that could go wrong technologically. So by just having cards and ropes and just some basic magic things, that's just ideal. That just is brilliant. Yes. Brilliant. Have you had something that has gone wrong, or is there an interesting story that you could share of something with some client or clients or things that have happened on one of your travels? I mean, again, when you're just packing things on the plane, you don't have to worry about things not making it or your baggage or whatever, because you've got it with you. You can go pretty much do it without anything.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that's true up to a point. There are some things that have to travel in our in the hold as one or two props that we can't take in hand luggage. But what we do is we whenever we buy props, we buy two of everything, so that when we travel and we do have to put things in the hold, we've both got exactly the same things in our cases, so that if one case goes missing, we've still got another one in the other case. Of course, if both cases go missing, we're stumped, but invariably that doesn't happen.
Although, Ivor, if you remember last year, we were flying to New Orleans to work for a client over there. San Antonio, apologies.
San Antonio, yeah.
And we got a message. I don't know how they knew this, but we got a message through our phone apps saying, we're sorry that your cases will not be there when you land in San Antonio. And we're like, oh, great. And we were working for the client. This was Sunday night, like 11 o'clock at night. And we were working with the client first thing. So, of course, we carry our magic with us largely on our backpacks, but our clothing is always in our case, toiletries and all that sort of stuff. So Ivor and I think, what on earth are we going to do for clothes? The magic will be fine, but we need to look smart tomorrow. So it just so happened there was a shop open. It was Hugo Boss. So Ivor and I had to go to Hugo Boss and buy at least a couple of nice new shirts for the performance the next day, because the trousers that we had on would have been fine enough for this, but we needed a proper decent top. So we did all that, made the purchases, and then arrived at our final destination, and our cases were there before we were. And we still have no idea to this day how that happened. How on earth did our cases arrive before we did? Bizarre.
It was.
Wow. But working with some of the people, have there been any obstacles or something that has come up when you are giving a presentation and they say, wait a minute, well, we've had this situation? I mean, I guess you do a little bit of improvisational work at the time saying, okay, well, this is how I would get around that. How do you address those issues that pop up at the last minute?
So there was one time we were working for a client and we had spent some time with them getting a brief on what the presentation was going to be, what the topic was. We'd spent a lot of time with the managing director to make sure that, you know, everything was going to go smoothly on the day, getting on message, etc. And we were sitting on the day at the back of the room waiting to get introduced. And when he introduced us, he introduced us and told everybody that we were going to be talking on a completely different topic from the one that he had actually briefed us on.
Oh, boy.
And we thought, right, so that's not what we prepared. So as we were walking up to the stage, the two of us are walking together, we actually, on the fly, created a brand new presentation. We were able to use the same magic, but we changed the messaging so that it reflected the topic that he said that we were going to do, so that he didn't look stupid. Because the last thing that we want to do is make him look bad. So we did the presentation. It went over really well. And afterwards he came up and he said, "I'm really sorry. I realized what I did." He says, "I can't believe you managed to do that, to actually change everything at the last minute." He says, "But thank you for doing that, because that's saved my face, you know?" So yeah, that was an odd one. Luckily, that's the only time that's ever happened, but that was probably the most extreme example.
Yeah. I think a key takeaway from that, and this is what we've always been as well, is be flexible. You know, your client, you never know what situation you're walking into, no matter how well prepared you are and how much you've told your clients. The amount of times we walk into an environment where the client has just either changed it deliberately and for whatever reason, or just they haven't known what they're doing. So you just have to be flexible and adapt to each situation as it comes. Mm-hmm. And also, as you get older, you realize, you know, you can't control everything. Magic is all about control, and you want to control it, but sometimes you just have to let stuff go.
And kind of roll with the punches like you did there. And of course, I think your experience over the years when you were walking down there, you can adapt because you can apply a previous presentation that you had done, or maybe something in your mind's like, hey, this would work, and you can kind of play off of each other. But the nice thing, again, about the two of you, rather than one person having to be relied on to handle the whole thing, while one person is performing, the other one could, in that particular case, be thinking, okay, well, I see where he's going, and I can build on that, and then one thing is kind of like another.
Yeah.
That's very true. Yeah, we it's basically like the one ahead principle, you know, where we're just keeping one ahead of each other.
That's right.
Sometimes it might look graceful, but we're probably like ducks paddling furiously underneath the sea.
Would you recommend also for others who might be interested in getting into a training area like this to find another partner like the two of you have found with each other to do this? Or I'm assuming obviously people could do it individually, but I would think that there is a synergy between the two of you that is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to, if you're working with someone else, you have to, that relationship has to work. There has to be absolute trust. Like the great thing about Ivor and I, when we go on stage, we have 100% trust in each other. And both of us have blanked at various times. But the great thing is knowing that the other guy's got your back and will step in at a moment's notice. And invariably the audience will have no clue what's just happened. So the comfort factor of being two people is great. It then means you've got to know your stuff as well, because you can't be stepping on each other's toes and repeating the same sort of messages. So you have to split your material, you know, equally between the two of you as well. But I love it, particularly when you're traveling, because it gives you someone to travel with as well. And, you know, Ivor and I like a lot of similar things. So we like music, we like jazz bars. So anytime we travel, we make sure that we enjoy the culture and the location that we're in as well. And that makes it a lot more fun. I think I would be bored if I was doing it myself.
Yeah. I mean, certainly that works for us. It may not work for everybody. I mean, it is a personal choice. A lot of people, you know, like and want to work on their own. But you know, we've always worked initially as a three, as you know, and then, you know, as a double act. We've worked a long time now as a double act, and you know, I certainly wouldn't want to do anything else, because as Jeff says, of that kind of, there is a kind of comfort factor and a kind of support mechanism there, which is great, both on and off stage.
Well, it's hard to find that kind of companion with whom you have that kind of relationship, certainly. And the three of you, again, with Bill Duncan, did. And I assume that after Bill's health turned bad, that you weren't necessarily seeking to get a third person because you wanted to keep a trio together. It was kind of like, okay, we can do this, just the two of us, I assume.
Yeah. It just felt a natural continuation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think, I certainly never thought about a third person. I don't know.
No, not at all. It was just a natural progression. When Bill unfortunately had to step away from the business, we just carried on. There was no thought to bring in someone else in, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's been very successful for you. A big question I've got and has been lingering, I'm sure people are asking, when's he going to ask this? But the name, Fifth Dimension, where did that come from?
Good question. So we discussed it. We actually came up with the idea fairly early on in the business. And we discussed it back and forward and a whole heap of other ideas for 3 weeks. And then we came back to Fifth Dimension. I always liked the word dimension. I just thought that was a really cool word for a business.
Yeah, but where it came from was the Twilight Zone. You know, because the introduction to the Twilight Zone program talks about the fifth dimension. And, you know, the thinking behind it was, you know, you've got the four dimensions that you kind of recognize, you know, your length, breadth, height, and time. But the fifth dimension is just one, is a step beyond that, is something that, you know, is maybe something that you can't explain. And that kind of summed up, I think, what magic was. And also, to be true, what our business was, because it was difficult to explain at the beginning what we were actually planning to do. But that was the thinking behind Fifth Dimension. But as Jeff says, we went all around the houses looking at other names before we came back to that.
I like that for that reason.
Yeah, every so often somebody, when they see us on the program, think, why are we getting a 1970s pop band in to talk about safety or leadership or whatever?
Exactly. And is that one of the things that you kind of jokingly discuss and kind of address that elephant in the room right away, saying we're not that band?
Sometimes, yeah. Only if it comes up, which is pretty rare nowadays.
Yeah.
It was probably more common back in the day. And every so often it happens and somebody says, oh yeah, when I heard Fifth Dimension were coming in, I thought, what is it, Age of Aquarius or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, that was the first thing as an old guy that I was thinking of then, certainly, but it had nothing to do with that, but it had everything to do with the Twilight Zone. That, I think, is just beautiful. That's wonderful. That's great. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I had a chance to chat with you guys, and thank you for sharing and being quite candid about your business model and how that can be replicated maybe by others to do that. There's room in the world for a lot of others to do a lot of what you've been doing for so many years successfully then too. And for people who want to get in touch with you, that's the fifthdimension.com, or where do they get to find it?
Well, our website is fifthdimension.biz, so B-I-Z. Mm-hmm. So they can certainly get us there. Look us up and we'll happily chat to anybody about what we do if they want to get in touch.
Yeah, and we're on Facebook as well. I think it is it Fifth Dimension Magic on Facebook?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
And since the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, my question would be, what would be your word? What would be your, let me talk first, Jeff, what would be your magic word?
My magic word would be relationships. They are crucial. That is the way to grow your business and this business. So I'm pointing out Ivor's above me just now in the box. I don't know where he is on your screen. But yeah, so the relationship that Ivor and I have, as well as the relationship with our clients, that is everything in magic.
Ivor?
For me, thinking of a business, it would be service. We believe that we are there to serve our clients. That's how we approach our business. It's not a case of us doing them a favor, or, you know, we are there to actually do what we can for them. And that's why, you know, when we're talking about being adaptable and flexible and kind of rolling with the punches, and not throwing a strop when things are not as you seem, it's because we're there to make it the best experience for the clients that we can.
Brilliant. Great. That summarizes everything that you've all said there in just a few short words. So thank you very much again for those words. Thank you for being my guest here today. And I appreciate the opportunity. I always get a chance to visit with you guys. We talk a little bit, well, actually a lot more about business than we ever have. I mean, in the years we've visited, usually we're just having a coffee or a drink in a pub or something in which we get a chance to visit. I look forward to the next time that we get a chance to see each other. And hopefully that might be Blackpool, maybe this next year then too.
Fantastic.
So until then, thank you guys very much. That was Jeff Burns, Ivor Smith, and this is Scotty Out. Thank you very much, Jeff and Ivor. I appreciate you guys joining us this week on the Magic Word Podcast and for your insights and for your candor in wanting to share this information about your successful business. I think one of the things that I got as a quick takeaway is, as you had mentioned, Jeff, companies will cut back on their budgets when it comes to entertainment. They will double up when it comes to training, particularly safety, to their employees. So there's always room in their budget for hiring someone from the outside to come in. And you can still do magic and you can still get a piece of that corporate pie if you are serious about trying to make money and do some magic then as well. I just think that's kind of an interesting thing, a different angle. So if they say, hey, sorry, we're not, if a company says to you, sorry, we're not hiring a magician or we're not doing a Christmas party this year or whatever it might be, saying, well, are you training your employees? Are you having any presentations perhaps that I can help with? Surely you're doing that. You have to as part of OSHA regulations. Anyhow, look into that. I thought, again, golden advice. Thank you very much. Well, as I mentioned, I'm going to be traveling to England next week to the Blackpool, and I look forward to seeing many of you. I understand there could be close to 4,000 magicians there, so I hope to get around to each and every one of you, or that you come around and get a chance to see me. I know there are several of you listeners out there who are will be attending, so when you see me walking around with my microphone, or even if I don't have the mic in my hand, which will be rare, I want you to please come over and say hello. I would love to chat with you and hear your thoughts on this podcast, and also to personally thank you for listening to this. I do thank every one of you around the world who do tune in from week to week, and also those of you who subscribe to our pod letter. And if you don't, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there should be a pop-up that will say join our pod letter, and you can subscribe there, and each week you will get an update as to who's going to be on from week to week, and who's coming up next week, and suggestions from the archives. It's just a nice little weekly update from me to you, basically, about what's happening and news you could use. So please subscribe. And while you're online, if you could give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you use to listen to the podcast, that will be greatly appreciated to help our podcast grow. And then leave some nice comment. If you if there's something you don't like about that, just contact me personally, and I would like to address that. But if there are things you like, please let the world know and share that on your social media too. That's always great. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember these two key words, relationships and service. Very important. This is Scotty out.